Welcome to Hype, Hypeable.com's entertainment news podcast. This is a very special episode dedicated to pretty much, I think, the entire Hypeable staff's collective favorite show. My name is Selena, and I am joined this week by three huge Buffy fans. One of them you know very well. It's Marima. Hello.
Hey, it's me.
And two, you know also very well, or at least you should if you pay attention to Hypeable and the other podcasts. Caitlin and Karen are joining us from Rewatchable, and there's a very special reason why. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. And you've both been on Hype before, right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, good. I thought so. But today we are gathered. Unfortunately, we couldn't all be here. We wanted this to be a huge show because we have so many Buffy fans on staff. And the reason we're doing this is twofold. First of all, we all love Buffy so much, and we've been writing about the show pretty much since we launched Hypeable like 5 years ago, and it was only a matter of time before we dedicated an entire show of Hype to talk about it. And second of all, speaking about Rewatchable, our other Hypeable podcast, we are starting a very exciting Buffy-related project, which I will let Karen explain.
Yeah, so for those not aware, Rewatchable is a podcast dedicated to rewatching old shows. We started off saying only shows that were canceled that weren't given enough love on air, and we've kind of expanded that idea and gone back to just watch our favorite shows that are completely over. And we've done a bunch of them. We started with Firefly. We did like Pushing Daisies, and we're just wrapping up our Avatar and Legend of Korra round. And next we're doing Buffy, and people have been calling for Buffy since the beginning. And we've always been a little hesitant because it's such a big show, but we had to do it. So no time like the present, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm so excited. It's gonna be so much fun because obviously, yeah, one of the reasons we wanted to do a show like Rewatchable and Hypeable is because we're all huge fans of these iconic shows that have come and gone. And obviously, I think for Buffy is probably the one we've been wanting, like you said, it's the one we've been wanting to do the most because it means so much to us. And I think all of us here, sort of, Buffy has helped shape us in a lot of ways that we'll get into on this podcast. We'll be doing Rewatchable, and we'll be starting that soon. And on that show, of course, because we're watching it with people who've never watched it before, we won't be getting into spoilers. So we'll basically be watching it from beginning to end, but through the lens of not having seen it before. So the superfans sort of have to keep our mouths shut about the things that are going to happen as to not spoil the new people that are watching with us. So we thought, why don't we do a special episode on Hype where we can get all of our feelings out about the things that we're about to re-experience. So this is full of spoilers. If you haven't watched Buffy before, then you need to go and, well, you need to do that anyway. You need to go and subscribe to Rewatchable on iTunes so you're ready for the first episode. And just listen along to that podcast. But if you are a huge Buffy fan and you're hopefully planning to listen to Rewatchable and re-experience the show with us there, then we hope you enjoy this episode where we'll tell you all of our many, many, many feelings about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So I think we should start, before we get into sort of the specifics about what we love about the show, explain a little bit about how we became Buffy fans in the first place, because I think we've all got sort of quite personal stories. Caitlin, why don't we start with you?
Well, mine's going to be really disappointing with that introduction then, because I don't remember.
Oh, no. Well, it's good we started with you then.
I was watching Buffy when it was on, and I started watching. I don't even remember when I started watching it. So I have a terrible story because I genuinely don't remember. It's like I've loved Buffy my whole life.
But I like that, though. How about you, Marima?
Yeah, I don't have like a crazy story. I started watching Buffy after the whole season was like the whole show was over, because when Buffy was airing, when it finished, I was like 11 or 12, and I wasn't really a big TV person, so I wasn't really into it. But
shocking.
I know, crazy. I did not watch this TV show. Everyone is surprised. But I do have these memories of like seeing an episode here or there before I actually sat down to watch it, because my older brother, I guess, had just seen it because, you know, he was kind of in that age group that would have grown up a little more with Buffy. And, you know, I remember catching an episode here or there, and I specifically remember the Dark Willow episode and him being like, oh, yeah, love and crayons, like, save the day. And me being like, what is this show? And, like, so that's, like, stayed in my head. And he's like, oh, like, whatever. Because, you know, in the kind of eye-rolly way of someone who's like, this is terrible. No, don't change the channel kind of thing. So, yeah, I had seen a couple episodes and I just really liked it. I had never understood what was happening. I saw the episode where she, like, repeats her day over and over because of the trio and stuff. Like, I saw these random episodes that were not ideal.
Yeah, I love how that's the one that's stuck in your mind. Like the worst one.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know what happened, but I swear I saw that episode like 3 times before I actually sat down and watched the show.
Or maybe you just think you did because she went back.
Yeah. It was my own like Groundhog Day moment. But anyway, yeah, a couple years after Buffy finished, I decided like, oh, I want to watch this. And it was, you know, doing reruns on some sci-fi channel or something. And I checked it out and was like, oh, like this show is the best thing ever made. Why did no one tell me about this? And yeah, and then I basically like raced through the whole thing and have loved it ever since.
How about you, Karen?
Kind of in the same boat as Merrimut. I didn't start watching it until the whole series was over. And I actually refused to watch it when it was airing because I was a scaredy cat and it was too scary for me and I couldn't handle it.
Me too, but I watched it anyway.
Which is kind of funny. But my show, my absolute favorite show of all time is Charmed. And Buffy and Charmed, while obviously two completely different shows, kind of have that same sort of vibe to them. And so I was like, okay, I need to watch something that's not Charmed, but close enough, you know, something related to it. And I decided to start from scratch, episode 1 with Buffy. And I just remember flying through it because it was so good. And yeah, it's, we'll talk about, you know, the lasting effects and everything. But yeah, it was a really great show. And I'm so excited for rewatchable.
Yeah, me too. So, okay, so I guess it's my turn. Let me paint you a little picture, everyone. Settle in. No, I'll try to keep this brief. But I do want to tell you a little bit about the little country I grew up in called Denmark, where we had 2 TV channels growing up, and I lived in, like, the middle of nowhere, so I, like, hardly ever got to watch TV, and the only TV shows I was aware of existing was Friends, Beverly Hills 90210, and that was it. So they did this thing, I think when I was around like 11 or 12, where they did this thing called Series Sunday, which is they would block off like a Sunday every week and they would show new episodes of these random shows that they purchased from the US. And they were Buffy and Angel and Roswell and Dark Angel. And one more. Oh, you'll know this one, maybe. The New Zealand TV show, The Tribe, which I actually really, really love.
Why?
So this was my TV that I like grew up watching. So this explains a lot about my TV tastes, I think. All these strong women just kicking ass on TV every Sunday, and I never questioned that wasn't like a normal thing. And I think Xena, they showed that too, but I didn't watch that at the time. So anyway, I started watching Buffy, it was around season 4, and I basically just kept watching it up until the end, like an episode every week, but I was like a season behind because it takes a while to make subtitles, apparently. So this was when I was discovering the internet, so I would go online and I would read scripts about the new seasons because I couldn't watch it. So that was like my way of spoiling myself on what was going to happen, so I had this like dual relationship, and I was obsessed with Buffy, and like Karen too, I was like too scared to watch it, and I would be like terrified and have nightmares, but I would always keep watching it because I was so obsessed with it, and I would go out and buy the VHSs. Like, I would spend my allowance every week on like one new VHS of the show with like 4 episodes on it and just rewatch them over and over, and I would like make steaks. Okay, I'm gonna stop because that's too crazy, but I've gone back to Buffy over the years every so often. I rewatched it earlier this year actually with my family because they'd never seen it before, and I've shown it to like all my friends. Like every time like I meet like a new friend and I'm like, we have like a connection, I'm gonna show you Buffy and you're gonna love it and then we can be friends. And it continues to be just my favorite thing of all time. And I think that kind of leads into the next point in our discussion, actually, about how like even after all this time and after all these new great shows are coming out and special effects are getting better and other shows are taking stuff from Buffy. Like, in my opinion, Buffy is still one of the best shows ever made, and I think it has a lot to do with the fact that the characters are always what matters more. Like, whatever happens on that show, the main characters and their development is always the central thing. And I think that's, we're hopefully going to see that too when we do Rewatchable, that after all this time, that stuff holds up. But I don't know what you guys feel about that.
I would agree with that. I think for me, the reason that I go back to Buffy again and again, yeah, definitely the characters, like the individual characters. And I have a weird attachment to like a lot of the side characters in Buffy. Which we'll get to a bit later. But I think also, you know, it is that whole thing of like the first, I mean, you know, Xena, okay, that did a good job, but like kind of the first female, like sort of superhero show. I'm obviously a huge comic book fan and a huge fan of like that whole superhero genre. And I feel like, I think we had this conversation maybe on the last episode of Hype, but I feel like people kind of forget that Buffy was really groundbreaking when it started because there weren't a lot of shows doing this. And now when you watch it, when there's like all of these other shows with all of these great strong female leads, you're like, oh, well, you know, whatever. And oh, the effects are terrible. And, you know, but you kind of forget like, but they're copying Buffy. Like it's not the other way around. You know, not copying is like a strong word. But yeah, for me, that has always been definitely one of the reasons that I'm drawn back to the show again and again, even when the character of Buffy is frustrating. Like just the idea that there are 7 seasons I can watch that feature the same woman and like show her growth the whole time. And, you know, I think it's also that for me, I find it hard. And I don't know if you feel the same way. Like, I kind of find it hard to choose a favorite season or like a favorite arc on Buffy because for me, it's like a whole experience, kind of. I think because I watched it all at once in my head, it's like you said, it's like this whole overarching kind of development for each of these characters. So every time I go back and watch it, first of all, I have to watch the whole thing. I have to be like, I'm going to watch this. I'm like, no. Have to watch all of it, or I start one episode and then suddenly you're done with the next. Yeah. But I think it's also that, you know, because of that, every time you go and watch it, like there's always something new in it, even though, you know, for someone like you who obviously knows the show basically off by heart.
What are you talking about? I can't quote the entire episode.
Yeah, sorry, just BYO steak. Yeah, every time I go and watch it, there's always like something kind of new or something fun that I hadn't sort of noticed. And so like that would be great on Rewatchable to, for you guys to pick up on those things as well. But I feel like that's kind of part of the appeal is it doesn't ever feel stale as a show. Mm-hmm, and it kind of still feels like it changes even now, like many years after it's finished.
God, we're going to be so annoying, guys. We're going to be like Jonathan in season 2 and we're going to go, did you see that guy? Did you see that guy in the club? Yeah. Did you see what he did?
That's 1,000% what you'll be like. Great.
I'll contain myself, I promise. What do you guys think, Karen and Caitlin? Why do you think the show holds up?
Well, it has to be the special effects, obviously.
They're iconic for sure.
Obviously, the characters, you know, are a strong draw. They're so well-rounded and they're so complex. And the relationships between everybody is so well-developed. And, you know, like Marilyn was saying, as you watch these people grow, you can't help but continue to fall in love with them. And I think that's especially true for Buffy. Natalie, who couldn't be here, you know, we talk a lot about a lot of main characters on shows or in movies don't tend to necessarily be your favorite. You kind of, you know, drift over toward the side characters. But for me, Buffy is one of the biggest draws to the show because she grows so well and so organically over the 7 seasons. And I think aside from that, the stories just continue to be relatable. It's something that even though this happened, you know, a while ago, you can still experience a lot of these issues today, and especially like the high school culture and everything. A lot of those, like the bullying or things like that, still very relevant. And it just, yeah, it just, it never gets boring to me. And I mean, I would consider myself probably like a newer fan, and I haven't seen it as many times as you guys have / Selena has, but it still feels new every time I watch it. There is so much to look at and so much to think about. It's such a complex show that I really hope the newbies can look past mm-hmm. the stellar special effects and really look at, like, the heart of the show and fall in love with it like we have.
It's kind of amazing what Karen was saying, that, like, you can always find something new because so many shows, because, you know, the fantasy has become a lot more popular, they borrow so heavily from Buffy and the tradition of Buffy, and yet... So there are so many things you feel like you've seen before, maybe. So I hope the newbies aren't going like, oh, God, so this is where that comes from Buffy. But despite all of that, Buffy still surprises you no matter how many times you watch it. And I think that's kind of amazing.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the good things about us, obviously, watching it with them. Because, I mean, without influencing them too much, it is worth pointing out that sometimes when you watch Buffy and you notice, like, the characters acting strangely, like, when you watch other shows, you might think, okay, well, that was a weird acting choice, or, oh, okay, well, that didn't lead anywhere, or whatever. But when you watch Buffy, like, why you can keep noticing new things and why it never gets stale is because everything is so consistent and everything is so well thought through. You know, like, when you see Xander doing something or saying something in episode 3, you know that Joss Whedon and the writers and the actor and everyone are very aware of what that means for that particular character. And when he comes back 3 seasons later and does or says something that relates back to that, you know that that's all intentional. And I think for me, because again, like you guys have said, I've watched this show way too many times, but it's probably the only show that I can do that with because it never lets me down. Like, there never comes a point when I watch Buffy and I go, oh, well, the magic is gone from me. That, like, a show like Lost, for example, which is awesome while you're watching it, but then you get to the end and you were like, okay, well, a lot of those things, they were kind of just done for shock value. Like, that's never the case for Buffy, and that's never, like, they never pull cheap tricks at the expense of character. And they never put story above character, which is just my favorite thing in the whole world. And very few shows, unfortunately, take that from Buffy, which is one of the reasons why it's so hard for me to get into shows these days. But I guess we'll get into that more on Rewatchable. But I think this leads nicely into our next point, which is if we had to name one character that we loved above all else and their arc through the show, which one would it be? And I think, Karen, you kind of answered it already, but if you want to elaborate a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have to just be a little cliche and say Buffy, because she's so complex. She's so strong and yet so vulnerable. And I'm not as well versed in the episode titles specifically as you guys probably are, but the Halloween episode where she puts on the dress and she turns into what she thinks Angel wants her to be. And it shows her vulnerabilities and her fears so well. This girl who is incredibly strong and seems fearless has so many fears inside of her. And I think that's so relatable. And it shows that, you know, you can be afraid and yet still be strong. And even if you're strong, it doesn't mean that you're not going to be afraid of something. And the way that she grows over the course of the series is really beautiful. She kind of starts off as this girl who Giles really kind of has to take care of and rein in sometimes. And by the end of the series, she's got this little group of people that she's taking care of, that she's mentoring. And to look back on how far she's come is just awesome.
This might be odd to say, but Buffy is also mine. Oh, I very seldom love the main characters the most in a show, but Buffy for me is the one that I do love the most, kind of like what Karen was saying, that she can be vulnerable and strong. And it's so, she's kind of the epitome, I feel like, of what a strong female character is, that it's not just that they're physically strong, which she is, but that she is strong on the inside. She's able to have this full range of emotions. She goes through so much over the course of 7 seasons. Like, she dies and goes to heaven and then comes back. Like, she goes through a lot. She loses a lot of people that she loves, and she goes through a lot of heartbreak. So it's never shy about letting her feel the emotions that she feels and following this basically superhero through these ups and downs and these horrible traumas and also very high highs at times for her really is so relatable and so interesting for me to follow. And I find her arc that way so immensely satisfying. And I think she's a big reason I always come back to the show.
Mm-hmm. Because I know that Marimer, you're not necessarily a huge fan of Buffy the character, if I'm understanding you right.
I like her as a character, but yeah, you know, she's not my favorite character by any means. Like, I can enjoy a character and find them really interesting, but if I find them, like, frustrating to the percentage that Buffy does while watching this, then they can't be, like, my favorite character. My favorite characters are always characters that I, like, really like and enjoy versus, like, find interesting, you know what I mean? I mean, you know, you guys can like Buffy. I would just like you to know that you're objectively wrong because the best character on the show is obviously Cordelia Chase. So it's like not even a question. We get to Angel.
Is Cordelia your favorite on Buffy or is she your favorite because of Angel?
No, she's my favorite on Buffy.
Okay.
I love Cordelia on Buffy. I think Cordelia was a really fun foil to Buffy in terms of like the high school kind of drama that they outline. I just really enjoy, like, you know, the episode where, what is it, Earshot? When mm-hmm. Buffy can, like, hear everyone's thoughts and Cordelia's is just exactly what she says. Like, it's just, like, everyone else has all these, like, inner turmoil and Cordelia's just, like, thinks the exact same thing and says it out loud. And, you know, I always really enjoyed that, like, for the most part. She wasn't a character that was, like, punished for being, like, superficial mm-hmm. or, you know, being interested in the things that she was interested in, and that did not, like, undermine her ability to, like, be practical when they were being attacked by the Hellmouth or, like, any of these kinds of things. She kind of had a practicality that a lot of the other characters sort of lacked, and she was also smarter than, like, you'd give her credit for, but she was just so fun to watch on screen, and, Angel was great to get more Cordelia, but then Angel was terrible because they ruined Cordelia, and I would never be over that. But no, like, I genuinely really loved her in Buffy. I loved her the first time I watched the show, and then when I found out, like, oh, there's this whole other show about her, I was like, oh, this is amazing. And then I was like, oh, but I have to watch Angel? Like, oh, this is the worst because I don't like him at all.
Yeah, but actually it's funny because we just got word just then that Natalie's joining us in a bit, but I just want to comment on what you just said, which is, I think for me it's exactly the same. With every time I rewatch Buffy, I like new characters, and I actually find myself disliking new characters as well a little bit because I notice new things about them. But I think for me, and it's interesting you say Cordelia, because in a lot of ways my favorite character is Cordelia. But I probably would not have noticed this, how awesome she was on Buffy, if I hadn't watched Angel. Like, I might have. I don't know. It's hard to tell. But because you watch her arc on Buffy and you realize how well it ties into what she becomes on Angel, which is she becomes a fully fledged hero and, in my opinion, a much better hero than most of the other characters because of just her personal circumstance. And that all starts with Buffy, but her development happens in the background on Buffy, and on Angel she's allowed to be a main character and she really benefits from that. But I just think it's fantastic going back to Buffy now and seeing the small steps she takes towards what then happens on Angel. And if Angel had never happened, her arc on Buffy would still make sense. We would just never have known, you know, how great it was going to be and then how awful it was going to be. So
we don't think about that.
Yeah, no, we pretend that doesn't happen. But I think for me, I mean, again, I have a lot of favorite characters and they sort of switch.
Sorry, one character, Selena. You can only have one character.
But the one I'm going to name to finish my sentence is Giles. The reason that I love Giles so much, especially in rewatches, is because he's probably one of the few main adult characters on TV shows who's allowed to be part of the action, like the main action. Like, often when they have a TV show and they have parent characters, and Buffy is no exception to this, they die or they have, like, their own storylines, you know, their own love lives, their own drama, and it's all sort of very removed. But on Buffy, Giles is always allowed to be one of the central characters, and he's allowed to have emotional arcs that tie in with what's happening with Buffy and her friends, and I really appreciate that, I think. And of course, it's Giles, and it's, you know, it's Anthony Head, and I love him. And, he sings really well. And I noticed that none of us have said Spike, which is, I just remembered. And I don't know.
I'll put my hand up for that one.
Yeah, me too, because I like forgot until just now. But I'm sure we'll have some thoughts on that in a minute when I add in. Oh, Natalie's here. So
I am here.
That's perfect. I was just about to call you out.
And like Spike bat signal that you said.
Yeah. So hello, Natalie.
Hi. Sorry. As you can hear, I'm not super podcasting mode right now. But yeah, I've listened to you guys for a minute. And yeah, I think I agree with a lot of what you guys have said about like rewatching and like finding new things that you like and finding things maybe that you now don't like. And I'm going to be very interested to see on this rewatch we do with Rewatchable about Spike. Mm-hmm. Because he is far and away, for 10 years, I would have said he was my number one favorite fictional character, not just on this show, of all show, like of all time. But there are obviously elements of him that could be looked at in different lights, and some people, you know, like the debate recently had about Snape with Harry Potter, that people can see as, you know, super problematic, super abusive, super unforgivable. And I'm going to be interested to see if my opinion of him changes watching it now, because I do think that, you know, he has a pretty major redemption in that he does something relatively unforgivable without a soul, but then to make up for it goes and gets himself a soul to prevent anything like that happening again. But that for a lot of people, it's still really like a hard line no, if you know what I mean. But I love him both for a humor character, both for a like crazy romantic character. Not that the incident I'm referring to is something that I see as crazy romantic, but everything with Drusilla and everything like that. And yeah, he's been my favorite character for a long, long time, but I'm going to be interested to see if any of his behavior feels different to me now, because I haven't done a full rewatch in quite a long time. So I'm wondering if I'll start to like it less. Like, someone I've definitely started to like less on past rewatches is Willow. I don't know if we want to start dragging people we like less now, but like I feel like starting out like Willow and Xander are two characters that I was like, oh yay, so great, and now they're like two of my probably least ranked. But my other number one, if I'm gonna have to have a number one, or if we're kicking Spike out of bed, is Anya, definitely.
Yeah, she's a lot of people's favorite too. I'm like so scared of going into a huge Spike debate right now, but I just quickly have to say that I've always been Team Spike in everything he's done, because I've always, that thing that Buffy does with the soul has always been hugely interesting to me, and has always been such a well thought out, complex idea is how it relates to Spike, because if not for Spike, we would have this thing where, oh, well, if you haven't got a soul, then you're evil, and if you do have a soul, then you're good. But then comes in someone like Spike, and also someone like Faith, obviously, and changes the game on that and says, well, here's Spike with whatever made him love Buffy, whatever we believe that was, a chip, whatever, obsession, and he starts to do good. But he still doesn't have a soul, so the good he does is always framed by that. So I almost feel like the fact that the love that he has is enough to almost override the lack of a soul, but not quite, is so fascinating to me, and I love that. And I feel like the fact that, like you said, like he does this horrible thing and then he goes and gets himself a soul, I feel like the person he becomes because of that is, in my opinion, it's redemption too. And again, you know, we can compare him to Angel. It's in a far better way than Angel did, and far more complex and far more shades of gray. And I love Spike's arc through the whole show.
Maybe he's my favorite. I'm going to be interested to see how it plays out this time, because I have no idea if I'm going to change opinion on it or not. But for a very long time, it was everything to me. So, yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see what the newbies think about it too. But so kind of moving on from that, I guess it's a good time to talk about our favorite season / part of the show. Because, you know, as Merrima said earlier, it's hard to separate because it is all part of a long arc. But I do think there's a point to be made that when you go through the show, there are very clear separations, you know, like this, like Angel era and not Angel era. There's like high school years and post-high school years. There's the Marty Noxon age, and there's, you know... So do you guys have a favorite, what part of Buffy do you enjoy watching the most, or do you feel like it all blends together?
I definitely feel like it all blends together. Maybe that's just the way that I initially watched it, having watched the whole thing in one go after it had already started airing. But I think, you know, the earlier seasons to me feel very nostalgic. It's very Buffy, like iconic Buffy. But then the later seasons, I feel like, are more relatable in a lot of ways because the clothes become a bit more, you know, normal and, you know, Buffy.
What are you talking about? The clothes is awesome.
And Buffy grows up a little bit and the show feels more adult at that point. And I think, you know, that speaks volumes to how far Buffy has come, but it also just makes it a little bit easier to take in after the fact. So I'm very torn.
I'm a big fan, I'd say if I had to, and the ones that I've rewatched more, I like the post-Buffy death, like season six and seven, like the post-death seasons. That for some reason, they've just always been my favourite, even though I know that some people think that the show should have ended at five and that six and seven are like trash, that it should be thrown out the window. But for some reason, those two are my ultimate favourites, and I don't really love them. Like, I feel like, I kind of feel like the high school years are a bit filler, or not a bit filler, but, like, the show changed what it was. Like, it got, you know, a little bit, of a change in tone, and the high school years are a little bit of a, not a drag, but they're a little bit cute.
There are a lot of standalone episodes in the early years compared to the later ones.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. And just they're a little bit cute, and they're a little bit, you know, a little bit ridiculous at some points. Not that this show isn't ridiculous all the way through it at times, but I don't know. I really like the post resurrection Buffy era for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite season is three.
Yeah,
I love season three. It has the most of my favorite episodes in it, and it kind of has. I mean, besides Buffy, I love Angel. So, and it's the last Angel season on the show, but. I mean, the last three episodes in particular, you know, you go from prom to graduation. Oh, God.
Yeah, great.
Mm. Oh, my God. So amazing. I love kind of all the stuff with Faith, and the mayor is just hilarious.
Yes.
I love the mayor so much. So I kind of love the entire arc with the mayor and planning to destroy graduation day and everything, and how everybody teams up at the end, and all the way we go from Buffy having to kind of return after killing Angel, and to like she's really at a low point, to kind of a sort of a bittersweet high point at the end because Angel is leaving, but they've saved everybody for the most part. So I find it, for me, that's like the high point of Buffy. That's kind of everything that I love about Buffy is season three.
Mm. And Merma?
Oh, yeah. I was actually so surprised you said that, Kaylin, because season three is also definitely my favorite, but I feel like it gets such a bad ride from people because, you know, like Natalie says, they think it's kind of like, oh, that's cute. But no, I love season three. It definitely has a lot to do with Faith. It has a lot to do with the mayor. It has a lot to do with the finale of that season, like just overall. And also I genuinely really enjoyed the high school years of Buffy, like the, you know, high school as hell theme was really fun to watch. And I feel like sometimes we forget about those episodes because of things like bad eggs and stuff, which like, let's
Wasn't
take a minute to recognize genius. Yeah, I mean, like, the high school years in general.
I mean, I don't know when that was.
I think what they were doing in those years, they did really well for the most part. And it all kind of came together and culminated really beautifully in season three. Then I have to say, actually, I also really like season seven. And I feel like that also gets kind of a, ugh, like, why from people. But as a whole, I really enjoyed what they were trying to do in that season. Maybe because Tara wasn't in it. That helped.
And, it did.
You know, a bit like everyone's like, oh, Kennedy. And I'm like, well, it's not Tara. So,
okay, I'm not going to get into that now.
No, I'm not going to get into it. But I agree with Natalie. Season six was really great, but it was also a bit hard going at times versus like season seven. I can just like season seven is I could just watch that through, you know?
Yeah.
Like otherwise it's kind of hard for me to kind of sort of jump in and just watch a bit here and there. But I could watch season seven all the way through and be like, yeah, I feel, you know, satisfied with that. So,
mm-hmm.
with Seven, it's kind of like all the main players are, they're kind of in place, and it's like there's not much coming in and out anymore, and it's just like it's sort of just ready to go, and it's very like cohesive with everyone that you need, and then everyone who's going to come back in and stuff like that, and it sort of it flows really well, and I think it has really good endings for, you know, nearly everyone.
Yeah,
I've never had a problem with the way Buffy ended. Like, some people could have wished for something different, possibly. But I've never really questioned it. I've never really been like, oh, that was an unsatisfying, you know, like some big shows or TV series or movies that have endings that people, you know, write angry opinion articles on for the next 10 years. I've never thought that about Buffy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not How I Met Your Mother, that's for sure. But, I mean, random. But I'm torn on season 7. I see what they did with it, but I think there were a lot of missed opportunities. I guess we'll get into that like in 5 years when we get to that in rewatchable. It's funny because when I was younger and when I was watching the show for the first time, my favorite season was season 5. And I think it's because it's the first one that I watched all the way through. And I also think that they tricked me because season 5 is what I like to call the Technicolor season, because they like up the, if you've noticed, like that's the lightest season color wise and they dress everyone like they're in a sitcom, and it like tricked my little teenage brain.
There's a lot in the house. There's a lot in Buffy's home as opposed to in dark,
and
like,
their clothes,
you know,
that's true as well. Yeah, that has a lot to do with it. It's a lot happens in daylight in and their clothes and Glory is like a cartoon, and Dawn, like when in my little brain I was like, oh my god, it's like me, you know, because I had brown hair and she had brown, you know. So I watched it later.
You're basically twins.
Oh, I know, right? But so but I think that when I watch it now, I still really like it a lot because I like Spike's arc in season 5, you know, with Fool for Love and with everything that happens to him. And when he goes, like, my favorite line of the whole show, like, I know you think I'm a monster, but you treat me like a man. And oh, Spike. So I still love that. But I think on sort of thinking about it, if I had to pick one, I would say this time I would probably say season 2. Because a lot, like, I'm not the hugest fan of Angel on Buffy, I have to admit. Sorry, Caitlin. But I do like what Buffy goes. There's a lot of great episodes in season 2, and I really enjoy, you know, Surprise and Innocence, and when Angel turns evil, and the introduction of Spike, and when Buffy has, she's finding Angel at the end of the season. Like, I just think that's so epic. But that's not to say that it's all downhill from there, because some of my favorite episodes come much later. Like, I think Restless probably has to be my favorite episode of the show. And so it changes, I think. I think it does the same for all of you guys. So when we're going to be rewatching this with the newbies, and it's kind of like what we've been saying, but maybe the answers will be slightly different. What parts of the show are we most looking forward to them getting to experience for the first time? Or maybe what parts are we less looking forward to?
I mean, once more with feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one can tell them if they don't already know. No one can tell them that that's going to happen.
Do you think they'll appreciate it as much, though, seeing as so many other shows have done musical episodes?
Oh, good question. I don't know. I don't watch very many other shows that have musical episodes except for all of Glee.
Yeah, oh god. But I feel like, because looking back on it now, like, Once More With Feeling is good for what it was, but it also, like, in some ways it doesn't hold up very well, so I'm really worried. But I really think so.
I don't like that episode. I'm not a big fan of it.
I'm not a huge fan of it either, because I feel like the dialogue is kind of suffers from, because the songs are so good. But then they talk, and it's like, oh, that doesn't feel as real as the other episodes. I don't like that. They're kind of breaking the illusion.
Sheet music book of it. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know, like, every song off by heart, but I say, oh, I don't really like that episode.
Petition to skip Normal again. Can we just pretend that never happened?
But it's such a head fuck.
I don't like that my fake show is fake.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about.
It's weird,
I think that's a good
it?
One. I think Buffy dying the second time as well, like the end of 5, the gift is going to be, they're going to be like, what? Are we done? One of the other big things I've been thinking about a lot is if we don't end up doing Angel once it breaks off, the times when Angel comes back into Buffy, not for story purposes, not for like, oh, what's happening with this crossover, but with his like personality and being funny and stuff in season 7 and the way that he changes, I think they're going to be like, what has happened here?
Yeah,
what?
Maybe.
What is this? So that should be interesting.
I have a really random episode that I'm excited for everybody to see. Some assembly required.
Okay.
Because everyone in my life, like real life, nobody's watched Buffy. Just me and like you guys. And the My Girl song, like, I can't listen to that and not hear that guy.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah. It creeps me out. And I try to explain it to people and they just don't get it. And I'm like, look, if you watch Buffy, you would understand. It's really creepy. And so I just need like the newbies to understand.
That's funny.
I'm dreading the body.
Oh, God.
Ooh,
that's going to be a hard one. I feel like you push that on people without them expecting it, and then they, like, hate you because they're like, how could you not have warned me because it's so awful?
Well, see, I think that's why I'm excited for them to see it is because,
you want them to suffer.
I've already gone through that pain. It's their turn now, and I can just sit back and watch them. Though.
I don't want to go through that pain again. No,
I always skip it on rewatches.
I will be interested just like going off that in general to see people's reactions to those kinds of episodes, like the whole of season 6 and the body. And I think that people who haven't seen Buffy think of it as, you know, Once More with Feeling and like these big kind of silly monsters and whatever, and don't recognize that there's actually like very strong emotional heart and the show is like emotionally devastating at times.
Mm-hmm.
And like we said, the way that those episodes are kind of woven in with the rest, they really hit you, but they kind of come out of nowhere. And then they, you know, you're like, wait, what? No, what? Like, is this the show that I'm watching? Like, what just happened? Because I think there are so many, like, it's weird, but there are so many huge moments in Buffy that in a way, like, haven't been spoiled for people. You know, it's not a show where people know, go like, oh yeah, and then this happens. Or they might go like, oh yeah, I heard that like Buffy dies or something, but then she comes back. But you're like, oh, just wait. Like, you don't know.
The great thing too is that, you know, maybe you do know, like things like Willow being a lesbian and stuff. Like, I feel like people do know it, even if they don't know they know it, but they don't know when it's going to happen and how it's going to happen and what it's going to do to her and all that.
And it's like, they know it even though they don't know, but they don't know it.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Exactly. That's, and you know, but I think the thing that I'm most looking forward to seeing is actually, speaking of Willow, is when she turns evil in season 6. Because when you rewatch Buffy, it's one of the things we were saying, how everything leads into each other. Like, Willow was set up to turn evil from basically the beginning. You know, like, they were slowly building her up to that point in season 6. And if they, you know, like things like if they'd never come back after season 5, that would have been fine. Like, her development would have been fine up until that point. She didn't need to turn evil for her arc to be complete. But it's one of those things where, too, you look at shows now where it sort of feels like they're rushing character developments because they're like, oh, it's going to be so cool when this character does this. So let's just have them do it in episode 3. Where on a show like Buffy, they took their time. Like, Willow could have turned evil in season 3. And it would have been far less impactful, but they would have been like, okay, we'll have to tell this cool story because what if we don't get renewed? But they didn't. And it's one of the things that I love about the show, because then you get to go back to like season 2 when she first begins to discover magic and she has that speck of darkness and Giles looks at her with that worried look. And then you get to season 6 and you're like, oh, it all makes sense. And I hope they pick up on that. And I even hope that they like see clues to that early on, because that's the thing about Buffy, is that it's not necessarily that you can't tell what's going to happen. It's that you can't tell how it's going to happen. And you can't tell when it's going to happen. But you see the clues early on because they feed them in so well. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
No, that totally makes sense. I also can't believe that no one's mentioned the objectively best episode ever made of Buffy, which is obviously Storyteller in season 7.
It's so good. Oh. Yes.
It's my favorite.
It's on my list for sure.
I love Andrew so much. I like all these weird side characters. I love Andrew so much.
Me too.
And, you know, I kind of like it as a joke, but also that episode is like so smart and so good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a good little summary of like a Buffy character development across
hello,
most of them.
Gentle viewer,
right? Where is that spin-off? I guess speaking of that, like, I'm interested to see, obviously I mentioned the musical episode and there's Hush, and there are a lot of episodes in Buffy that kind of play with convention and like play with different genres. And mm-hmm. so that will be fun to see, because it's not like a straight up kind of genre show in the way that like it has the same format every week. And like, this is what happens. Like, this yeah. is a Buffy episode. So that's really fun as well, because that is something that you like can't understand if you have never seen it. Mm-hmm. And so I think like just the general like tone and like the construction of Buffy and how it's all put together and like the dialogue and all of that, basically everything. I'm basically mm-hmm. looking forward to them seeing everything. It's a great summary by me. But yeah, you know, I just think there are like so many little moments that you kind of miss out on. Is what about like Giles' cue cards when like they can't talk to each other? Like, oh. you know, all yeah. of these moments, those are the moments that make me like want to watch Buffy again. So I hope they have a similar reaction, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
To talk up our team a little bit, and obviously Natalie and Caitlin can attest to this, is that our newbies have some eagle eyes. They've definitely picked up on things that I didn't pick up, you know, regarding like Avatar and Korra. Ariana and Brittany, who will also be on the Buffy Rewatchable, saw some things that I definitely didn't notice the first time around. And I think anytime you get into doing rewatches like this, especially for such an iconic show, they're going to be ready to look at everything and really pick it apart. And that's the great thing about podcasts, too, is like that's the point, is to delve in as deeply as you can and talk about it in depth. And so I have high hopes for some pretty hilarious moments and also for some really good discussion.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's a really good point, too, because I think that sort of leads into why Buffy is such a good choice to rewatch with new people that haven't seen it before, because unlike a show like, I don't know, like Lost, and keep ragging on it, I'm sorry, Lost fans, I do like it, but unlike a show like that, like, it doesn't hinge on whether or not you can figure out the mysteries. Like, the episode, the show isn't ruined if you figure out that Sandra is going to be a carpenter or that Angel is going to turn evil or anything like that, because that's not the point. Like, the point is what happens to these characters to lead them to those places. Okay, that's the carpenter thing, that's not really important, but to some people,
major
maybe.
Turning point.
Yeah. But when you watch Buffy, like, I know I was watching it at one point with one person. I had to stop watching it because I was like, it was losing my mind, because they kept going, ha ha, I figured it out, I've cheated the show. And I was like, that's not the point. Like, you're not trying to outsmart the show. Like, you're trying to watch these characters grow and stuff like that. And also we probably have to be prepared to, and I'm mostly saying this to myself, that even though you haven't watched Buffy before, there's going to be a lot of stuff that you know. Like, even if you don't know it, like, you know it. Like, we were saying, this is basically like the same thing you were just saying, Merrima, but like, you know that Willow is a lesbian, even if you haven't explicitly been told, because you've seen the pictures and you've seen it on lists, and you know that Buffy dies because that's like the big joke. You know there's going to be a musical episode, but maybe you don't know it. But I'm not worried that that's going to ruin the enjoyment of it.
And also, there might be things they think they know that they mm-hmm. don't actually know. Mm-hmm. Like the last episode I was on for Korra, and I thought a main character died, and he definitely didn't die. And I was convinced for the entire season that he was going to die, and he didn't. So you never really know.
Yeah. I also think, like, Buffy is a show that is good for rewatching because it rewards close viewing.
Yeah.
You know, again, to rag on Lost, like, unlike Lost where you're like, well, like, this will have to be picked up later, and then they just never address it ever again. Like, you know, things on Buffy, for the most part, if you pick up on something, like, it's going to come back. Like you said, they're constantly building up and developing these characters with Xander's innate carpentry skills.
And, oh, yeah.
You know, all of these, you know, central character aspects are all, like, constantly changing and developing, and, you know, they know the characters so well that, for the most part, there aren't moments where you go like, oh, it doesn't really seem to fit. So for someone, if they're rewatching or watching it for the first time and kind of really trying to pick out on those clues and things, I feel like Buffy is a good show because, like, yeah. it's intentional. Mm-hmm. Unlike other shows where you're like, oh, this must mean this. And then it just is never, that never happens again. You're mm-hmm. like, oh, did I, what?
But on Buffy, like, three seasons later, it's like, ha, it did mean that, but not in the way that you thought. And then you're like, oh, God, you know, so that'll be fun, too.
Exactly. I like that. You say it's intentional. I feel like that's exactly it. Like, you're not trying to outsmart the show, because the show is always saying, well, we're going to put this in, and the readers are going to, or the watchers are going to be like, ooh, you know, it must mean this. And then three episodes later, they're like, ta-da!
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about what we love about Willow. Yeah, sure. Buffy, too.
I like Willow.
Yeah, I feel like she, yeah. My feelings
really
on her like changed,
Willow.
Too, but I like her in general.
Xander,
yeah.
But Willow, yeah, I really love Willow. Yeah. So when do we get to talk about how much we hate Riley?
I was going to say, we talked about what we like. Let's talk about how much we dislike Riley.
Yeah.
And maybe other things.
Wait, there are other things to dislike
I mean,
Riley?
There's Tara. I don't know.
There's Ben and Lori, but mainly Ben.
Like, there's Beer Bad.
I like Beer Bad, actually.
What?
Maybe sometimes a little bit. Don't judge me. Anyway, Riley.
Riley is just the worst thing about this show. Like, that's why lack of personality and lack of engaging with other characters who I like, and just general uselessness.
You know what, though? I'll let the rest of you rag on him too, but I just have to say that, like, I was very surprised, like, every time, because I hate Riley, I hate him with all my heart. Every time I start a new rewatch and he's introduced, I'm like, oh, he's not that bad. Like, every time, I'm like, why do I hate him? He's really nice. And then, like, three episodes later, I'm like, oh, yeah, I hate him.
Yeah, but also, like, when he comes, you're like, oh, this means that, like, Adam's happening and with the initiative.
Yeah.
Like, it's just all mixed together in the worst storyline.
Yeah, but, I mean, for the part of the season when there's a small chance that he's going to hook up with Willow, I'm okay with it. But I think what I hate most about Riley is how Buffy says his name. Like, she'll go, Riley! And she'll be, like, all sad. And it's like, what he symbolizes is, like, my main problem with Buffy is that she's, like, has to run after this guy versus Angel, then it's Parker, then it's Riley, and then she kind of gets over it when she gets to Spike. Luckily, thank God. But she's like, oh, Riley, and they have, like, all that sex all the time, and it's, like, it's all a big drama, and I'm like, oh, just go away. And then he gets to season 5, and he's, like, trying to go away for, like, 5 episodes, and it's the most annoying thing in the world. And Sander's like, just chase after him and go get your guy, and I'm like, no, and it's, I hate it so much.
Xander really was like, he's the one. Like,
that was so
stupid.
Is that
just, like, because of his, like, deep vampire prejudice, and he's never fully chilled with, like,
he was in love with Riley.
It's because Riley's, like, the closest to Xander, and he's like, he's normal. Like, go for that normal guy. That's better than choosing, like,
Xander had a, like, not-so-secret crush on Riley, so that's probably what it was.
Yeah.
I think, like, for me, Riley I am really not invested in, like, any of Buffy's romances in this show, and, you know, I can deal with Angel and Spike as characters. Spike more so because he has more to do on the show.
Yeah.
But I can deal with them because they have, like, their separate things going on. And, you know, I know you guys are big fans of Spike. I'm kind of split on Spike. Like, he's interesting, but I don't necessarily love what ends up happening with him and Buffy. But, like, Riley has nothing else going on because the initiative is a terrible plotline. So he just spends, like you said, they spend the whole time being like, oh, like, we're so in love, and, like, oh, our relationship is so dramatic. Like, first of all, no, it's not. And second, no one cares. And, and, like,
except
because
Sandra.
Of that, yeah, yeah, the number one shipper. It's because of that that, like, I find Riley so frustrating. Because, like, while watching the show, there isn't a single relationship, like a romantic relationship of Buffy's that I'm invested in.
Oh my God,
and
I'm invested in all of them.
No, I don't care about any of them. And, like, they annoy me, but Riley annoys me the most because, like I said, he has nothing else going on. So anytime he's on screen, it's about, like, oh, now we're going to talk about, like, romance stuff. And I'm like, oh, can we just, like, go kill some vampires in a graveyard, please? Like,
yeah.
What if someone on Rewatchable is like, guys, I love Riley. He's the best.
Well, Karen hasn't said anything about Riley yet.
Oh, well, I was just letting you guys have at it. Because I basically agree, like, definitely.
Oh, good,
the lack
good,
of
good, good.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, you were over there being like,
he's gonna have a fan out there. Is this gonna be,
like,
one person?
Like, Riley apologist.
Yeah.
It's gonna be Mitch. I'm gonna predict right there that it's gonna be Mitch.
Probably. Oh, God.
We should send out a search for like the number one Riley fan and invite them on an episode of his own. Oh God, we like killed Natalie. Sorry. It was too funny.
Speaking of things we don't like, yes. Unless anyone else wants to rag on Riley.
I think we're good.
Things we don't like. I obviously, you know, appreciate Willow. I appreciate her character mildly. Sometimes she annoys me, but... And I appreciate her as, like, you know, a very visible queer character in the early, you know, 2000s and stuff like that, like, before it was mega common. And they didn't make too much of a big deal of it. They were like, yeah, she's decided she's with a girl now, and then everyone sort of became okay with it, and then that was it, and it was fine. What pisses me off is that it was a transition from straight to gay, basically.
Yeah, and that pisses everyone off, I think, yeah.
Because she was genuinely in love with Xander. She was genuinely in love with Oz. So she was genuinely in love with these men. And then she discovered that she was in, you know, attracted to or in love with a woman. And then the show treated it like she was now no longer attracted to men.
Yeah.
And that does happen for some people, I guess. But I can't really, I don't know, speaking from, like, personal experience, I can't really see that as being... the way things go for people. Maybe it is, but, you know, most people I know that have discovered that they are gay in later life, or, like, it's not exactly, like, late in her life, but, like, you know, she had genuine romantic relationships that were entire plots that were meant to be very real and very invested in, you know, real attraction, real, like, my God, can't stop ourselves attraction to the point of cheating on, you know, Cordelia. You know, so it's that intense for her, but then... she falls in love with a woman, and then it's like, okay, she's gay now, and they make jokes about, like, ew, men, no, like, you know, your Y chromosomes don't do anything for me, and I'm like, is that how that works? Because that's not how I think that works, guys. Mm. And I would have really liked it if they could have not done that, basically, and had a bit more of a balance there, or had a better representation of being bisexual, as opposed to making her a lesbian after her... You know, they clearly knew for a long time that she was going to be queer as well. Like, that was clearly something they were tossing around for a very long time. So they could have made her relationships with men, like, you know, they could have planted the seeds there if they'd actually wanted to do a full leap. But I would have appreciated more kind of, even if she wasn't with another guy, less bisexual erasure, let's put it bluntly.
Yeah, but I feel like, you know, obviously that's the writer's issue more than it is the characters, you know what I mean?
Yes, that's true.
Like, I always give Willow a pass for that because it just seemed very ignorant. Yeah, I'm going to say something now that's going to make you guys lose all respect for me, but I guess this is confession time. I was never quite able to stop myself from shipping Willow and Xander.
Oh, me neither.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. I'm so relieved. My secret is out, guys. It's holding it in for so long. I don't know. It's like the early seasons. It's like my teenage self watching these characters and being like, but she loves him so much, and watching her pine for him. And then he gets with Cordelia. I also really liked him with Cordelia. So I was like dual shipping. Like, I was so confused. And now every time I rewatch it, I'm like, but Willow and Xander. And then Oz comes in and I love Oz and I'm totally fine with Willow and Oz. I thought it was fantastic. And her... liking women, like, that's great, like, no problem. I just hate Tara. So I was, like, so confused, like, what am I going to do? Because it's not like I want her to, like, be with a man, because that's, like, that sounds like a wrong thing, but I'm like, but it's Xander. And then, like, they get, like, he saves her in season 6, and, like, those feelings come back, and I'm like, but I love them. And then I feel embarrassed, and it's hard.
Yeah, your shipping is my shipping.
Okay,
so
I'm glad.
I agreed with 100% of what you just said.
Okay, because I didn't know that made any sense. So I'm glad. But yeah, I know a lot of people have very strong feelings on that Willow and Xander thing. And I think, like, the way they handled it was unfortunate, especially because he kept having that thing for Buffy that just kept coming back and never really went anywhere.
That's the worst.
It is the worst. And I know that, like, the actors,
the Sarah
Michelle Gellar and Nicholas Brendon, were like, pitching the writers for Xander and Buffy to get together in season 7.
They wanted that to be, like, the end romance.
And, like, I'm glad they didn't. I'm really glad they didn't do it, but at the same time, I feel like that's maybe one of the few things that they kind of hinted at in the early seasons of Buffy that never went anywhere. And I'm glad it didn't, but, you know, looking back on it, there were some hints that never got followed up, I think. But, I mean, have we sort of set our pieces on, do we want to rag on Tara more? I feel bad. She can't help it.
You know? I've never hated I don't know.
What's wrong with Tara? I don't understand.
I don't understand her acting.
Willow so yeah. much, but like, I don't know.
It's just because of every time I rewatch it, her acting gets worse and worse. And I feel like she would have been really good. And knowing that Amber Benson is nothing like Tara in real life, like, it doesn't work for me. And it ruins so much for me. And I, unfortunately, you know, I try not to let it, but not a Tara fan,
unfortunately. I kind of just took it as her personality and never really thought about it as bad acting, but I'm sure I'll notice it this time.
yeah. Maybe not. Maybe.
Well, no, she's not like that in real life. So it's like, yeah.
Anything else?
the Dawn storyline, like, I'm not in love with, but I think the more I watch it, the more I like recognize what they were doing with that.
Me too.
And I can kind of be like, all right, I see it now. When I first watched it, I had the same reaction as everyone, I think, which was like, oh, she's so annoying. Like, go away.
Yeah.
But I love Glory, even though I hate Ben. So like that kind of made it worth it. Yeah. You know, I mean, I guess like not to, this is a whole other conversation, but the Spike Buffy romance in the later seasons made me reasonably uncomfortable to watch. And, I just feel like mixed about it. You know, I change my mind as I watch and, you know, I don't feel like one way or the other, but the like devotion of people to Spike and Buffy's romance makes me like somewhat uncomfortable considering some of the episodes that happen when
I know what you're saying about the shipper thing, and I think like the more you watch it the more you realize how problematic it is, but I think it's just so interest, like for their characters, like not as a ship but for their development, especially Spike. I find it so fascinating. I feel like you don't have to like it in order to be interested in the storyline, if that makes sense.
Right, but my problem with it is exactly what you just said, where you said it's interesting especially for Spike, because I don't like that most of the fallout from that storyline, which is about how is Spike going to recover from this? Like, how is Spike going to deal with this? Mm. And Buffy, as the actual victim of that situation, they kind of don't really address it enough on Buffy's part. And that is, like, one criticism I definitely have of the show when I rewatch it. And, you know, it's not that I wish that they hadn't done it with the storyline. I think, like you said, it's very interesting for Spike. It's kind of an interesting, incredibly gray area that, you know, some people feel very strongly one way or the other. That's fine. But I do feel like they kind of did a disservice to Buffy's character by making that sort of all about like, oh, poor Spike, like how's Spike going to recover from this? And you're like, but that always made me and continues to make me like feel uncomfortable. And because of the lack of like addressing that on Buffy's side, then their subsequent romance like just seems gross, a bit gross to me. But, you know, but then there are times when I really like them.
And it's kind of,
yeah, I know, yeah. He's fixed. It's yeah. So better. Like, but then there are times that I really like them together as characters. So, you know, like I said, I'm completely mixed on it. But I guess it'll be interesting to see what the newbies think of it. Because I certainly change my mind as I watch various episodes.
Here's a question about that entire issue. Because I actually do agree with Marima, and this is the thing I'm sort of the most, well, not worried, but interested to see if, like, my views on it change at the time, because I don't think the first time I watched it I even really processed it as rape, like, when I was however old I was when I first watched it, like, at all. I kind of processed it as him trying to make something happen and her fighting him off, and I didn't really equip it, you know, in cold terms, you know, it would still be an attempted rape, and I didn't really ever think about it like that when I was younger. So I'm very interested to see how that plays out. But that being said, and I do agree with the lack of kind of stuff on Buffy's, you know, side, whether she just sort of literally did just shake it off and was like, whatever, that happened, or if she had more trauma about it that apparently we didn't see. Do you guys think that, like, you know, Spike doing that, you know, without the... I mean, people do that with a soul all the time. But, like, do you think that his gaining of a soul is enough to make the character, like, redeemed for that action? In I mean, it obviously is to her because he's around for another season. But do you guys personally, like, think that that is, like, a fair play on his side, if you know what I mean? Like, that's the only thing that he could do? Like, if they hadn't had him get the soul, would it have been a completely unredeemable character?
Well, I do. And that's because the way I see the soul thing, I don't think, like, in real life, the analogy is troubling, but only looking at it in terms of the show and in terms of what they've set up with the soul, I do. Mm. And it's the same reason why I can watch Angel and enjoy the character of Angel, knowing all the horrible things that he did when he didn't have a soul. Because I see them, they're extensions of the same character, but they're not the same. You know, the Spike with a soul, his soul makes him William in a way that him without a soul, like, he was always trying to be William and he was doing the best he could. When he got
his
soul.
Personality was still fighting through, but it didn't have, like, the backup.
It didn't have,
like,
the soul. It didn't have it. Yeah. And he did the best he could without a soul, but ultimately he did not have that moral anchoring and that ability to evolve and to emotionally grow that a soul gives you. When he got the soul, he became it was like Angel. Like, if you're going to look at Angel differently from Angelus, then you have to look at Spike with a soul differently from Spike without a soul. Like, in my opinion, that's just fair. And also, like, just in season 7, like, they never actually really went back to a romance between them, which I thought was at least a good thing. Like, they didn't handle that the best way they could, but at least they never made them explicitly romantic again.
I think it's pretty romantic.
Do you think so?
Like, yeah, I think the subtext is pretty clear.
But they never, like, get together again. Like, she does she's nice to him, maybe nicer than, like, pre-soul Spike deserves, but
at the very end, it's really, she's his person. Like, he's her person. He's her go-to.
Yeah.
They're sleeping in the same bed.
But a lot has happened in that time, you know what I mean? Like, it's a very slow, I don't know, I think, obviously we can agree about that, and Karen and Caitlin, feel free to weigh in again, and we can talk about this for ages if we want to, but I do think the mythology of the souls they've set up in the show, it means something when that happens, and it gives, you know.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't know if redeemed is the right word. Like, I don't know if I would use that word, but it's a complicated thing because obviously, yeah, if you look at it just within the mythology and the context of Buffy, like, that's obviously what they are saying, and that's fine, but, like, at the same time, you can't divorce a show from, like, the social commentary that it's trying to make at the same time, you know?
Yeah,
so
that's true.
I feel like that it's that aspect that I find more troubling about Buffy. Like, not what they were trying to do. I feel like what they were trying to do and what they did, they actually executed very well in terms of setting up Spike's, like, as you call it, his redemption arc, and, like, seeing the parallel with Angel and Angelus, and then fine, that's whatever. Like I said, I find Spike incredibly fascinating and like very intriguing as a character, but it's not in a vacuum. Like, it's not separate from, like, society, and it shouldn't be. So,
but I also just hated that they did that in the first place. Like, I feel like they were trying to force, it's one of the few times where Buffy has tried to force a development that wasn't organic, you know, at that point.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think it was in character for him.
No, I don't think so either. And that's maybe why I'm a little bit more lenient, because I feel like it was something that happened.
It's like Jaime raping Cersei on the show.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it didn't happen like that.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just like, how dare you?
So you can cut him some slack because you know it was to serve the story and not to serve the character.
And see, I feel like I kind of feel the opposite, because I know that it was not necessary. Like, it didn't really make sense for him, and they could have got another way to get to that same end point. So that makes me be like, so why do it?
You know? Well,
like,
I agree, but it's probably the same as like not judging Willow for the bi erasure thing. Like, I've judged the show, but not the characters. It's too real for me, guys.
Yeah. 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 Anyway,
it's not
your fault.
No, it's not my fault.
There's plenty to say about.
So we kind of
very interesting.
We got derailed on that a little bit, and I feel like, you know, we're going to get much more into that in Rewatchable and getting the newbies' thoughts on it as well. So unless Caitlin and Karen, you guys have anything else you want to complain about, just before we end, I feel like we can't talk about Buffy without talking a little bit about Angel, the spin-off show. And I specifically added in this point because I know Natalie has a lot of feelings or thoughts.
Oh, well, it's not, yeah, I mean, I have thoughts about it. It's kind of more about whether, you know, we can do rewatchable of Buffy, you know, without Angel. And we certainly can rewatch Buffy without Angel, but it's more if people are going to get involved with Angel at all, whether they should watch it at the same time, you know, or not, basically, because it's an incredibly closely crossed over show. Like, it was literally designed by Joss. I think there's kind of a legend that he told that, like, when Fox was trying to, like, schedule the shows, he was kind of like, no, it has to run directly after Buffy. It's set in stone. And they were like, it's not set in stone. And he sent them an in, like, he got a rock cutter to cut into a piece of rock, Angel, 9 p.m. on Fox, if you know what I mean, as in, like, you know, Tuesdays on Fox, like, for real. This is a story he told in an interview. So it's designed to be watched, like, Buffy, Angel, Buffy, Angel, Buffy, Angel, concurrent storylines. Regardless of that, you know, people are smart enough to figure it out. There is a relative amount of crossover. But I think the development of characters, especially ones that come back into Buffy, like Angel himself,
he's the only one, right?
Immense. He might be the only one. I'm not sure.
Like Willow, Fred, there's like a...
Yeah, but she never comes to Buffy. There's much more the other way.
Oh, yeah, it goes the other way.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I kind of just see it so running concurrently, and I feel like that it would be, you know, a really interesting watch to do it like that. It's just a matter of the timing. But the show itself, I love. Like, I think that I would have never in my wildest dreams imagined Angel developing, like, the character developing the way that he does in that
show. I love
show.
How he develops.
Like, the humour and just the other characters that he has around him, like, you know, like Wes and Fred, Cordelia, obviously her development, though she ends up having a pretty bad ending. And mm-hmm. Angel had some interesting choices. Obviously, Spike is a big part of that show for the last two seasons as well, which, you know, if viewers of Buffy end up falling in love with, you know, Spike and wanting to know what happened after he quote-unquote dies. Like, there's that aspect. But, I don't know, I think it's a super high-quality show. I think it took some turns and stuff that Buffy never was able to. I'm not saying I like it better, because I don't think I do, but I think that it's a great, like, a great complimentary piece that I would have never even imagined was possible until I saw it done. So, I don't know, I think it's a whole nother ball game. And, I do want to watch it in concurrent, like, regardless of what we do at the podcast, I'll probably try and watch it as it flows with Buffy, because that's the way it aired and because I want to fully immerse myself in it. But I don't know, I just think it's Angel, number one, is the character of Angel, is just so powerful on his own as a standalone lead character of his own show. Like, he absolutely blossoms in a way that I just... I'm so constantly stoked about. So I think that you're missing a lot of what that character can be outside of Buffy, you know, without that show. But you guys, some of you guys haven't watched it all the way through, I think.
Yeah, Caitlin, right?
Who?
I haven't. I've only seen the first Karen. Four seasons.
Yeah, I don't know how much I've watched, but it was a fair chunk of it. And then I think I looked up the ending because I was really stressed about it.
Yeah, I know how it ends. I know that, but I just haven't seen
it. It ends by, like, destroying all your favorite
characters. Yeah, like, everything dies.
And yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
in
everything
horrible
that you
ways.
Like.
I mean, yeah. I wrote an article a few years back on Angel's anniversary, basically arguing for Angel. I was trying to be provocative, and I said, like, why Angel is a better show than Buffy, but I was, like, lying. So, welcome to online journalism. But so I was basically saying there are parts of Angel that I feel like are stronger than Buffy.
Yeah.
Specifically Cordelia's arc until they ruin it. And just some of the standalone yeah. episodes and just some of the things they do, some of the villains. I feel like Angel does a lot really, really well. But I feel like on Angel, where Buffy is consistently good and consistent in general, Angel's bad parts, they ruin the good parts for me, unfortunately, on a whole. Like, but Angel season 4 is just atrocious and destroys, and Connor and some of the stuff that happens in season 5. No, you're like, he's like,
no,
the Riley.
Once Connor comes,
everything
Connor
is
comes,
ruined.
Like, that's the beginning of the end.
And I feel like as
Angel.
Well, there are some things about Angel that I feel cheapen the show as a whole. And I feel like, also, if you watch it concurrent to Buffy, like, just in terms of talking about that, I feel like when it's good, it draws my attention away from Buffy. When it's bad, it also draws my attention away from Buffy, because I'm like, what the hell is this? What is happening? And there wasn't as much crossover as I would have liked, partly because they switched networks, obviously, which kind of made that harder to do. And there were times on Buffy when I was like, there's stuff happening on Angel and they just totally don't care. Like, things happen to Cordelia and, like, nobody cares. And I'm like, no, but you were so close in season 3. So my love for Angel is coming back to your problematic fave, like Buffy is the unproblematic one and Angel is definitely the problematic one, because there's so many amazing things about Angel that I would hate for anyone to lose out on. At the same time, a complete Angel rewatch has definitely not my favorite thing to do.
No, I totally agree. I find it really hard to rewatch because of the way that it all ends. Like, it just feels, especially for Cordelia, I'll get self-righteous for a second. Like, once Connor comes onto that show, basically Cordelia as the character that we know is dead.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it just cheapens the rest of her story arc. Like, it just cheapens what they tried to do on that. And like, the whole story about why Charisma Carpenter was fired from Angel and all of that, like, all of these are things that I just wish I did not know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think, because unlike Buffy, where, you know, I really like how it ended up and, you know, there are some missteps on the way, but like, overall, I find it incredibly like watchable.
Mm-hmm.
Angel, for all the good that it has, like, I, you know, never that invested in Angel as a character, but I do enjoy him a lot on his own show, but like, it's all about Cordelia for me, 100%.
Yeah, Wesley, so, like, a little bit too. He's really good as well.
No, I really like Wes. But I like, again, like, I didn't really like him on Buffy, but then he went to Angel, mm-hmm. and like, that was great. And I really love Fred as a character.
Mm-hmm.
But like, all of these characters have unsatisfactory endings on Angel for me. And it makes it really hard to kind of rewatch it knowing that that's how it ends up.
Yeah, it makes it hard to enjoy the good parts as well, in terms of a rewatch with newbies, like, knowing, oh, this is so great. Oh, it's like, you watch things and you're like expecting things to happen, like with Buffy,
right.
Like, you see things building up, and in Angel you see them build up as well, and then suddenly it's like boom. And it's all just, it's like, oh, like,
it's like, just kidding, all of this was pointless, all it means nothing. And you're like, all right, I get what you're trying to do in this, but yeah, like,
and that's such a cheap an Angel, because like, season 2 of Angel is some of the best television like ever made, and parts of season 3.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, when Angel is great, Angel is better than
Very
Buffy.
Good.
Like,
yeah.
definitely better. But I also don't feel like it's necessary to watch them together.
Yeah,
because
like, for
just
Buffy, the stuff that happens on Angel has no relevance. Like, on Angel,
right.
What happens on Buffy has much more relevance.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't see the, like, crossover as being as important, I guess, as you think it is, Natalie. Like, I think you can, as long as you watch Buffy first, then you're fine to watch Angel. Like, you can watch Angel later. If you watch Angel separately from having seen Buffy...
Because then, like, when you get to that episode when he's like, Willow comes in and it's like, it's Buffy, then you're like, oh, what? Oh, it's when she died.
Yeah.
And like, oh.
Yeah, and those moments are kind of fun versus, like you said, otherwise when you're watching them back and forth, you do get this kind of feeling of whiplash, like you said, with Cordelia and these other characters, of going like, why does no one in Buffy care about this? Like, why is no one... You know, it doesn't make sense as a viewer, even though you're like, well, they're in different cities, and like, oh, they, you know, they're doing their own thing. Like, versus when you watch them separately, you still recognize the crossover moments, like, for what they are, like you said, when she dies and et cetera. But you don't get that same feeling of being like, oh, it just feels weird to me that there's less concern, I guess,
between
the two.
Interaction than there should be, yeah.
Right. Especially with characters like Cordelia and Angel being, like, so central to the beginning of Angel, especially. So
and obviously, I mean, we'll talk about this on Rewatchable, and obviously Karen is the boss of how we end up doing things, but I do think, you know, once as well we get to the end of Buffy, and people might be like, oh, thank God we're done, or people might be like, oh no, I'm not ready to leave this world behind, it might be a good thing to have Angel as a backup, say like, okay, well, if you're really not done with Buffy, let's do Angel. And you get to see Buffy every once in a while, and maybe some of the other characters, and that'll be fun. But we'll see. This is all future stuff. And it's all Karen's choice anyway. So we're basically just...
No pressure.
It's
I think
election.
You give me more power than I actually have, but I don't mind.
Yes. Any other thoughts on Buffy before we get into a bit of listener feedback? No? Are we excited to get started? Oh my God, welcome to the Hellmouth. Are we going to watch the pre-pilot? Are we going to watch the movie?
Oh no.
No, wait, can I pitch my idea to Karen, which is, at the end, I think that you should record like a commentary for the movie as you watch it, because I watched it the other day and it is perfection cinema. It's so good.
We did that with the Avatar movie, like the Avatar The Last Bender racist movie, and I refused to be on it because I didn't want to watch the movie again, but the newbies did it. So yeah, that'll be interesting.
That's
I would rather watch the Buffy movie than the Avatar movie, to be honest.
Buffy movie is gold. It's so good. In its awfulness. Amazing. Well, we'll deal with that in 10 years when we're at the end of Buffy, and we'll be fine.
Yeah, great.
But yeah, I'm excited. We're very excited to get started. And then, like, if you're listening to all this and you're like, yay, Buffy, then go, like, to iTunes and subscribe to Rewatchable so you're ready for the first episode of Buffy to roll in. And go to Hypeable to find that as well when it comes in. When do you, we have a rough release date set?
Yeah, I think, let's see, we're recording our wrap-up episode for Legend of Korra tonight, actually, which will be out tomorrow, December 6th. So that means December 13th will be our first intro episode of Buffy, where we just kind of intro the hosts and get to know each other and say silly things. And then the 20th will be, hopefully, our actual first Buffy review episode.
Merry Christmas, Buffy.
Yes. Oh my God, amends. I know, and obviously to the listeners, like, we're going to get into listener feedback now, and this is all you guys being huge Buffy fans, but remember not to spoil. Like, please just keep that in mind, that we're trying to keep these people unspoiled, because it's not going to be as fun if they know what's going to happen. So we have a bit of listener feedback to wrap up the show, and this all came into us via Hype, because we talked about Buffy last episode and we asked for some feedback. So the first one, this is just a short one from Shauna, who doesn't have a question. She's just wanted to let us know that she just wet her pants with joy at the news of a Buffy special. Hashtag greatest show ever. That's a little too much information, Shauna, but we appreciate the enthusiasm. And Merima, do you want to get the next one from Janeth?
Yeah, Janet says, thoughts on Buffy? There's so many. To this day, I consider it to be the best TV show ever. Also, I honestly don't think anyone has ever done season finales like Buffy did them. Mm. They were always so epic. I totally agree with that. Also, confession, after Buffy ended in 2003, I went a few years without watching any new shows because nothing would compare. But of course, I still watched Angel. Did I see you responding to this, Selena, being like, I feel that. Like, I was also in a period of mourning.
But I'm still that way. I'm like, it's just not as good as Buffy.
That is so true. You still say that. Like, but Buffy. Like, guys, Buffy. Like, that's not a, Selena, that's just a phrase. You're not making an argument. But Buffy.
That is my argument. Not, but yeah. Buffy.
I know.
Sage says, Buffy is such a timeless show, and I think part of its lasting appeal is how relatable and well-developed the characters are. Yeah, I mean, yes. That's basically what we've been saying for an hour and a half, so totally agree.
Mm-hmm. And Caitlin, do you want to get the next one?
Sure. Ravenclaw 1991 says, I finished watching Buffy and Angel about a month or so ago. Originally, I had a hard time getting into it because of the effects in the terrible 90s fashion.
What?
Whatever.
Awesome.
90s fashion.
Amazing fashion.
Yeah, this person
amazing
was born
fashion
in 1991. Like, clearly, you know, they're too young
to
remember
that
being real.
Hey,
I was born
in
1991. Oh, seriously? You children. You sweet summer children.
Seriously, Maram. Oh, my God. I didn't know that.
It's so like weird. Game changer.
What? Anyway.
Right. Everyone would be cool.
And I even ended up taking a lengthy break from watching it. I finally got back around to it and got extremely obsessed with it. Yes. I was devastated when I finally finished. Luckily, I still had another season of Angel, but even when I finished with that, I was devastated all over again. I ended up loving pretty much all of the characters, even Spike. Originally, I hated Spike with a passion, and I was spoiled by finding out he and Buffy had a thing. I wasn't extremely into that, and it made me hate him even more. But he was slowly growing on me as the show went on, and it didn't bother me as much as I thought it would.
Interesting.
Tucker says, the debate on whether Buffy should have ended after season 5 might be a good debate topic.
Okay, another hour. Let's go, guys.
I mean, I feel like we've kind of discussed this, because we all like the later seasons.
Yeah,
don't
I'm
we?
Glad it didn't end there.
Yeah.
I think it
there's
could
a case
have
for it, but it would have been like, miserable. Like, absolutely, wow.
We would have been like, remember that show Buffy where she died at the end? Yeah, that sucked.
Well, it would have been like the Angel ending, you know?
Yeah.
Like, when you watch it and you're like, oh, well, none of this even matters. Like, whatever. I mean, you know, I guess it's like a heroic death, so, you know, whatever. Yeah. But, no, I love season 6 and 7, so I'm glad it didn't end there. And
we
worse,
never would have had
by any means
Dark Willow, and we never would have had like all the Slayer's Awakening and all that
stuff.
Yeah,
and I like all the Potential storyline. I really enjoy that.
I feel like that could have been a whole new show of its own, like the Potentials.
Yeah, the spin-off?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, the training, hey, it's camp? Never
one
too late, right?
It's true. Huh?
One of the pieces of merchandise for Buffy that I had when I was, like, well, still have, is I have a couple of the Tales of the Slayer book.
Which oh, my were, God, like, I have all of them. They're so
canonical,
good.
Canonical, like, short stories about the different lives of the different Slayers, and I really like
they are
it.
So it was really, good.
I want to show about all of those, like, single episodes, like, with all of those. Like,
anthology series? Oh, my God, guys. Oh. Let's make it happen.
Hello, Netflix.
American Slayer story. There you go. Yeah. Except it's international. That would be, oh my God, those Tales of Slayer books, I'm looking at them right now and I have
I really
so
like them.
Good.
I have two.
I don't have any like Buffy match.
You need to get those. The short stories, they're probably my favorite. I also really like the Pretty Maids All in a Row, since we're talking about Buffy books. It's about Drew and Spike. Very, very good.
There were a lot, and I don't know if they were ever meant to be, like, you know, canonical parts of the story, but the Tales of the Slayer were kind of above and beyond, like, just in terms of, like, supplementary stuff.
This is, like, a one thing you don't get enough in Buffy is the backstory, the Slayer mythology. Like, you do get it, but not as much as you might have wanted to. I feel like I always felt like I would like to get to know some of the other Slayers. Have you guys heard about that Lost prequel, like, the Slayer before Buffy? Like, there was something was filmed to see where we saw her die and we saw her final fight and it just got lost. Like, this might just be a wild rumor on the Buffy boards I used to be on, but like the prequel that aired ahead of like the first episode or something like that. And it was like, we saw her die and it was like Buffy's predecessor. And I just love everything about the Slayers. That lore is so fascinating to me.
That's why mythology. Pool such a great episode.
Yes, yeah, like, exactly, and Restless, too, because of the first layer, and
so all of good. The flashback episodes. I mean, you know, that's, like, I have my problems with Spike, but there's value in having a character who's met, like, previous layers and can, you know, show you a flashback about him, so I appreciate that.
Oh, so much good stuff. I feel like we could keep going forever, but I am very, very, very excited to talk Buffy with you guys and to be unspoilery. But still get to rewatch it all and experience it all again. And I hope everyone who's listening are going to subscribe to Rewatchable. And it's spelled like it sounds, Rewatchable, all one word. And experience Buffy with us for the millionth time. Oh, God, I don't even know how many times it is for me. I don't really want to know.
Hopefully nobody, no newbies are listening to this episode.
No, at this point, I hope not, no. But if you are, then please come to Rewatchable as well. I think that's pretty much everything. Thank you guys so much for joining us, and we hope that you enjoyed it. And send your thoughts on your spoiler-free thoughts on Welcome to the Hellmouth to, is it at Rewatchable on Twitter? Is that it?
It's at re_watchable.
All right.
And then if you want to find us on Tumblr, it's rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com.
Cool. And we don't have a Tumblr. God.
We barely use our Instagram. Don't
That's
even
true.
Start. I can just sense
one.
This happening, and it's not going to. Because I'm not going to do it. I don't know how to Tumblr.
I don't know how to Tumblr either. I can learn.
I think next week, Selena's going to be like, "We need a hype Snapchat." Like,
yes.
I may have made
we
that
do
joke
need
previously.
A hype
I can't
Snapchat.
Remember.
That's not a discussion for this point in the show.
No.
Of course, if you are a regular listener to Hype, you know this already. But if you are coming to us for the first time, you can find us on Twitter at HypeableHype. You can find us on Instagram at HypableHype. You can find us on Hypeable.com, which is HYPABLE.com. Click the little bar in the left-hand corner and find the podcast and find Hype and leave us a comment on the podcast post. And you can find us on email, because we may not tumble, but we do email. That is hype@hypeable.com. And we'll be back on Wednesday with our usual episode. We are at episode 77 and we'll be talking about all the latest entertainment news, including the new Batman versus Superman trailer, which everyone is excited about.
Oh, my God. I am so much excited.
Yay.
That'll be like a hype special on those 30 seconds where Wonder Woman is. So get ready. Can't wait.
And speaking of hype specials, we're also planning one for Star Wars. So stay tuned for that. Thank you for listening. We all love Buffy. This has been fun. We want to be Slayers. And that's it. My name is Selena.
Could be Potentials.
Yeah,
I'm
Marima.
I'm Karen.
I'm Natalie.
And I'm Caitlin.